very appropriate that that Jim's mother was there, because she and Jimmy too were the families of the Anakin families were close to Jimmy's family. And in fact, Mrs. Anakin, years before, had a like an engagement dinner for Clarice when she was when she was, so it, there were real ties there. Dr. Freehoff gave the keynote address, and I mean I remember that I spoke, and I'm trying to, and of course Dorothy Blumenthal I can't remember, but I do have it in my I have the all that information in my papers, and I I think that someone, I remember that some one of the Anakin House Council Lounge participants received somebody received a key to Anakin House. Now whether it was one of them or whether we gave it to Dorothy Blumenthal, I just can't remember I'm not good at that kind of detail.
But I'm sure it's documented somewhere.
Yes, but it was a very warm and warm. It was in September and it was hot, and we weren't air conditioned yet. But it was a wonderful occasion, and everybody had there was just such a marvelous feeling. Togetherness and pride and hope for the future. It just was a dream come true, and it was for Mrs. Anakin as well, who I'm sure spoke. I know she clearly she was there, and I'm sure she was asked to speak.
What were some of the other highlights of your pregnancy? Were there new projects started other than the move to Anakin House? Did you recall, or?
Well, we had a program, in looking back over some of the old council newsletters, we had something called a Children's Enrichment Program, which I think was Head Start. And I know that began under my, in my administration, and as a matter of fact, we were having this was at the time of the Great Society program. Not Great Society. No. That was it was Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
The day that Kennedy was shot, we were meeting in the president's office. You know, everyone always says they'll never forget where they were when they heard the news. And Frieda Shapira was among those who were there. I don't remember anybody else. But when Martha Shapira, our secretary of many years, came into she knocked on the door, and with a white face announced what had happened. We didn't know that he was dead, but Frieda stood up immediately and said, "I have to go home to my mother. She will be absolutely devastated by this." And the meeting broke up. But we were planning the Head Start program. We called it something else, but it was for disadvantaged children, and of course subsequently it did come into being. And we also had we tutored children in Homewood at Bethesda Church, and it was our youngsters under volunteer supervision from NCJW, who on a one-to-one basis, who worked with children in Homewood to tutor them, and it was kind of an enrichment program, and that lasted quite a little while. And Reverend Patrick is still, I think, thinks very kindly of NCJW.
What were some of the other problems?
Well, a council house, which had started, that was our rehabilitation agency for discharged and about to be discharged mental patients, and I think
we talked about that.
The the NIMH grant was was about to run out, and this is directly connected with some of the major problems in my administration. Tragically, Frances Krasick's husband, Sidney, mm-hmm. became terminally ill with cancer, and she had to resign. And I just subsequently, you know, as sad as we were for her and for him, he was a wonderful man and had made such a contribution in his, you know.
In what way?
He was in the nuclear field mm-hmm. at Westinghouse. He was a some
scientist.
Scientist, yeah, in engineering. And I don't remember what his title was, mm-hmm. but he was very high up and very highly regarded. At any rate, not only did I lose Francis's services, and I came to be very grateful for the year that I had her with me at my right hand, because subsequently the then Vice President of Community Services had to resign because of the illness of her mother. And Marcella Allen, Mrs. Joseph Allen, Michael Allen, Joseph's brother, and Dorothy Lasday, who was Vice President of Public Affairs, left the city. So
double barreled.
It was double barreled indeed, triple barreled, because it was. These are other departments can operate. I mean, look in fundraising and finance. I mean, the thrift shop can operate with a chairwoman, whether there's a vice president or not. And I guess basically the community services, if they have chairwomen, can as well. But it's, after all, that is our reason for being, those two departments. So I was president and vice president of several things, and that second year was very, very difficult. And also, the then chairwoman of Council House, who was Eleanor Perlman, who was a past president, had been involved, in fact, was responsible for starting Council House. Brilliant, wonderful gal, lost her husband and was not left in such great financial circumstances, and she had to resign and go back to school and go to work. So I was also chairwoman of Council House while I was president. And I don't know quite, I think if I had to do it today, I absolutely couldn't, but you just do. I remember being absolutely bone weary at times, and Jim, my husband, was so wonderful. He was supportive and was really helpful, and he had all kinds of suggestions to make to me. And people did rally round. I don't mean to imply that I carried the section single, on my own back all the way. There was help. But you know, the buck does stop at the president's desk, and when you're missing your top people, it was my responsibility to see that everything went along. Clearly, I couldn't do it myself, and I did have a lot of help. But it was almost a burden that I thought I couldn't handle.
I was going to ask you, how did you manage with your family, and did you spend 8 hours a day at the office? What was your schedule like?
Well, I spent a lot of time at the office, more than at home, because I lived in the East End, and after all, things were at the office, and it was just better to be there where all the files and everything was, so that it was definitely at least a 9-to-5 job 5 days a week. It was a full-time presidency, without any question. And I'm trying to think if there, I don't offhand recall other projects. If we're going to talk some more, I'll look again. But I went immediately, I think I did say this in a previous tape, from the presidency into the chairmanship of Council House. And I ran across a newsletter with a kind of a tribute. I guess it was like a tribute for the role that I played in getting Council House taken over by getting the state, or the county rather, to take it over. And well, that information will all be there.
Can you tell us a little bit, now you did mention the one convention in Los Angeles. Did they have the Program Institute at that time while you were president? The Washington
Institute. I don't believe that I don't remember attending those. I don't think I did. You know, I was, first of all, I think they were, it seems to me they were every 3 years. I don't think they were every 2 years. I could be wrong about that. It was after I was president that I really I started to get involved, actually got involved in advocacy because of Council House, in a way, because we worked so hard to get the Mental Retardation Act passed in 1965 at state level. And that's what made Council House possible. And I was very heavily involved in the legislative fight, and I just got kind of interested in that. And then I got into juvenile justice, and I'm sure that was after I was president. I remember going to an absolutely fascinating 3-day conference in Washington that NCJW put on in the field to bring the problems of juvenile justice and the children without justice. This was after the study had been completed and the book that was titled Children Without Justice was published. And that was a fascinating experience too. And then we got...
How did you get to that conference, remember? Did you
find
yourself?
I think that I represented the section there. Possibly, I might have been, it might have been, if I was state public affairs chairwoman at that time, and I, here, that was 75 to 79, sure. It was in that capacity because we, as all statewide, were pushing very hard for the passage of the Juvenile Justice Reform
Act. When did you become state public affairs chairman?
In 1975. And we skipped over entirely the fact that I was on the national board.
Well, I'd like to talk about that.
Yes, that was it, from 67 to 70.
The chronology of this does not...
No, I understand, but it helps me to remember when things happen. You know, I keep forgetting under what, in what capacity I did some of these things. But on the national board, I was elected in 1967 and served till, it was a 4-year term. And the first year I served on the National Executive Committee as an elected member of the Executive Committee, because I had family in New York and could therefore afford to pay my own expenses because I could then see my children at the same time.
Who was national president?
Joe Weiner, I think, had just come in. Oh, I'm trying to remember. Pearl Willen had gone out of office, and Joe Weiner became the national president. And that was just in 1967, clearly, it was the 1967 war in Israel. And that profoundly affected NCJW at all levels, and particularly at national level. And we had had a fine program in Israel for many years in connection with the Hebrew University, and we had built the Hebrew University High School a number of years before. And a delegation of our women went to Israel to see, at, you know, when the state of Israel when they got Jerusalem back, you know, when they won the war, our women went over to see what specifically NCJW could do in the field of education or social service or whatever, and the needs in the areas of education were still paramount, and that was the beginning of the research center for innovative education. It had a different name at the time. It was Education for the Disadvantaged, and they changed the name, but not the purpose. And that was the project that they came back with, and that was accepted at the next national convention. Incidentally, I didn't make the national board the first time I ran. Eleanor Perlman had been elected to the national board at the end of my presidency, the end of that year. And then when her husband died and she had to go back to school, she had to resign. And so that I don't know whether it was that, it wasn't that, I don't know. At any rate, they put my name up from the floor because she had withdrew, I guess she withdrew. I don't think she ever served. That was it. She'd been nominated and couldn't serve, withdrew her name, and they put me up from the floor. And who knew me at that time? You know, and I remember a couple of our women absolutely in tears and hysterical that I was not elected. And I really thought they were crazy. it was to me such an honor to be nominated, and I was young and I had time, and then, you know, if it came, okay, and if it didn't, I still had lots to do in Pittsburgh, but I did make it the next time around because I did have more national exposure. So it must have been in 77 that I had run from the floor.
77.
75
to
77
did you run national board?
I'm sorry, national board, 67. It was 65. Mm-hmm. 65. I'm sorry, I was looking at something else.
I thought we had lost 10 years in this.
No, I was just, I was looking at the wrong place on the paper.
Yeah.
Did you remember, besides Joe Weiner, some other people that were involved at the national level with you? Other board members that you might recall, maybe some?
Maurice Halper was a board member with me. Shirley Levitan, who became a national president later on, was one of my roommates at a national board meeting. Ellie Marvin. There are so many. You know, I just... Bernice Frieder, who was that was the name I couldn't remember, who was the commissioner at the women's meeting in Houston, whose staff I was. I would, you know, if I saw a list,
people make you feel welcome at all these groups.
Betty Jane Fleischaker. From St. Louis, from Louisville, rather. Mm-hmm. Betty Jane Fleischaker was my ideal of a national councilwoman, and she, unfortunately, you know, she served her 8 years as a vice president. I think that bylaw has been changed now. I'm not sure, but she served 4 2-year terms, and either had to move up or out. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, she was not in a financial position to take. I think she would have been a national president. I just don't think there was any question about it. But she couldn't do it. And she has remained active to this day, and she's just, to me, one of just an ideal, very active she was the one, she was the individual who made me see that the Vietnam War was wrong and that we ought to be in it. We had a long talk. You know, that was a very trying period for many of us who were not used to questioning our government. You know, if we were doing it, it was right. My goodness, have we all learned now to ask questions and with love and pride and caring for what happens to the country. But I'm always grateful to that. I hope I would have been sensible enough to have come to the conclusion myself, but I hadn't yet, and she helped me there.
Could you give us just briefly some of your duties as National Board Member?
Well, as I say that, for my first term, I served on the Executive Committee, and I was appointed Vice Chair of the National Membership Committee, right back where I started. I always wound up in membership. And Shirley Levitan, subsequent National President, was the Chairwoman. I think that I just stayed there. I think that I kept that vice chairmanship the second term, you know, the second part of the half of the term. I also got again what's new. I got into national fundraising, and represented Central District on the original ANS Annual National Support Committee. That was a struggle as far as the getting the sections to really to support it. But I think it's arrived now. I think that there is support for that, that there is the extra fundraising effort at the national level to fund the kinds of programs that we need to do. Was there? Is that it?
I think we'll stop here. And we'll talk about your other organizations next time. Thank you.